from WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, 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 what is up, beautiful people? Happy hump day. Yes, it is Wednesday, February 11th, and you are tuned into the hottest sports show around. Yes, Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. Folks, we've got a fantastic show for you today with a lot of discussion and one fantastic guest, okay? Today, I'll be sitting down with Damon Rensing, the MSU men's soccer coach. Damon will talk about his incredible 2015 recruiting class. We will also be diving into the Michigan State men's basketball team as they got a much-needed win over Northwestern on the road last night. Also, Magic Johnson has some choice words concerning the upper echelons of the Los Angeles Lakers team, of course, his former franchise in which he played in his entire NBA career for. Also, we've got an intriguing Barbershop Wednesday that focuses on former MSU hoop star Adrian Payne. All of that and so much more, but as custom here on Current Sports, let's start the show like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this February 11th. All right, folks, we begin things with the MSU men's basketball team. Travis Trice scored 16 points off the bench as Michigan State bounced back from the loss against Illinois with a 68-44 whopping of Northwestern, excuse me. Now, Luros Tum-Tum Naren got the start in place for Trice for the Spartans as they used a 22-0 run in the first half to gain control of the game early. Now leading 38-14 at the half. My goodness. Now Denzel Valentine and Brim Forbes also scored in double figures with 14 and 11 respectively. What a game. We'll be diving into that one in just a sec, folks. Also, last year, if you remember, on April 8th, Adrian Payne and the Michigan State fans lost an angel in Lacey Holdsworth. Now, she was an eight-year-old that loved MSU basketball and had been battling cancer for 2 years. Of course, she eventually lost her life. And to carry on with Lacey's legacy and spirit, the nonprofit fund will have its first fundraiser on Wednesday, entitled, of course, Lacey's Legacy. Now, that will be taking place March 4th at East Lansing's Buffalo Wild Wings, 20% off. All proceeds, will go to Princess Lacey's Legacy Nonprofit Fund in order to provide children with cancer an alternate and fun therapy to beat cancer. All right, the MSU women's basketball team, they take the hardwood tonight at 7 p.m., and they will be taking on Penn State in University Park. Now, this will be the first time these two teams meet this year and second straight game at Penn State. Now, both are tied with a 3-10 conference record, although MSU has not beat Penn State in their last three meetings. And Penn State leads MSU in overall meetings 27-14. All right, Adrian Payne. Speaking of Adrian Payne, right? Former MSU basketball star, MSU men's basketball star Adrian Payne was traded from the Atlanta Hawks to the Minnesota Timberwolves for a protected first-round pick. Now, the surprising success of the Hawks this season has given Payne little opportunity to develop his game in the NBA after being selected 15th overall just a few months ago in the draft. Now, Payne will get an opportunity to prove that he is a player on the rise in this league. Now, the Timberwolves in that situation should give him more opportunity to play. So we'll see how that one pans out. All right, Magic Johnson was a guest on ESPN's First Take yesterday and had some strong words for current Lakers executive Jim Buss. Now, Magic made it clear that him and Jim Buss have had their differences when he said, quote, "He's mad at me because I criticize him." Then he's like, "Magic is trying to get a job with the Lakers." And he goes on and on and on in a rant that you'll get to hear in just a sec. Now, Magic stated that was not the case and was, in fact, trying to make the organization better and get the Lakers back on the winning track. All right, the Detroit Pistons continued their push for a spot in the postseason with a 106-78 victory over the Charlotte Hornets last night behind 23 points and 12 rebounds. That's right, it's called a double-double, folks, from Greg Monroe. Now, the Pistons are now 16-9 in their last 25 games and are just a game and a half behind the Hornets for the eighth spot in the East. The Red Wings take on the Penguins in Pittsburgh tonight at 8 p.m. Detroit enters the game with a league-best power play percentage of 25% and scored a power play goal in three straight games. Now, the Wings are currently third in the Eastern Conference, while the Penguins currently sit in fifth place. All right, former Clemson standout Taj Boyd may have a future in Detroit after a private workout yesterday with the Lions. Boyd didn't have an ideal senior year and fell to the sixth round in last year's draft before being cut by the New York Jets. Now, the Lions need depth at quarterback behind Matthew Stafford, and if the workout went well, Boyd could be the number two guy in the Honolulu Blue next year. All right, Detroit Tigers designated hitter V-Mart has successfully completed his surgery on Tuesday in order to repair a torn meniscus suffered in his left knee. According to the reports, Martinez will be able to resume full baseball-related activities 4 to 6 weeks and will be ready to start at the start of the regular season. And Tigers greats Kurt Gibson and Jack Morris will pair with current analyst Rod Allen on FSD's broadcast of the games. Now, Gibson was in a similar role from 1998 to 2002 and says he's looking forward to getting back into the booth. All right, folks, without further ado, let's start the show. That is going to be pretty fun, folks, to see Kurt Gibson and Jack Morris in the booth doing their thing on television. I'm really looking forward to that. Of course, they'll be paired with Rod Allen and Mario Mpemba, who have done an outstanding job on FSD for years and years and years. So looking forward to that one. Some intriguing headliners there, folks. If you have any thoughts on any of those or want to chime in on anything that is on your little sports noggin, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. Now, I do have two extended headliners here. One was breaking news actually about an hour ago. News was released that Hall of Fame basketball coach Jerry Tarkanian has died. His son, Danny Tarkanian, announced that, again, just at approximately 11:54 a.m. via Twitter, saying, quote, "Coach Tark, my father, the greatest man I have ever known, passed today to take his place in heaven. I will miss him every day of my life." Now, Tarkanian was 84 years old. He had been hospitalized since Monday for a respiratory ailment and infection. Now, of course, Tarkanian was certainly a staple in the world of hoops and would certainly be missed. He had been hospitalized 3 times in 10 months. So rest in peace, Coach Tarkanian. Thoughts and prayers with his family. Also, folks, we got the Hoop Fest is coming up in March, actually. Boys and girls in 3rd to 8th grade are given the opportunity to learn from well-respected basketball legends from the Basketball Coaches Association of Michigan during this free clinic. Now, this will be taking place on Saturday, March 28th. Check-in is at 7:45 a.m., and the clinic will last from 8:30 to 10 a.m. So registration and all of the information concerning that, if you're trying to get your little one involved in it. Again, the dates for this are March 26th through the 28th at Jennison Fieldhouse right on the campus of Michigan State University. All you got to do is go to www.marchmagichoopfest.com. Again, that's www.marchmagichoopfest.com, and all of that information will show up there. Again, a free clinic, you can't beat that. All right, folks. All right, folks, and I said, you know, of course, Tarkanian passing away, that was my first extended headliner. My other one is one that is rubbing a lot of people wrong, including myself, and that concerns the Little League World Series, folks. Now, Little League Baseball has decided to strip the U.S. Championship from Chicago-based Jackie Robinson West and suspended its coach for violating a rule prohibiting the use of players who live outside the geographic area that the teams represent. Now, this was announced this morning, folks. The organization found that Jackie Robinson West used a falsified boundary map and that the team officials met with neighboring Little League districts in Illinois to claim players and build what amounts to, ideally, a super team. Now, as a result, the United States Championship has been awarded to Mountain Ridge Little League from Las Vegas. How about that, folks? I really could not believe that story. I want to play a quick bite. This comes from, I believe, ESPN sports writer. Let's just play that really quickly here, Alex.
Have adults, you know, acting like children. And ultimately what they did was they took boundaries and imagine the towns you guys both lived in and stretching into neighboring towns. They redistricted for their own purposes to get a couple more players. At the time that it happened, and even after the tournament right away, nobody said anything, which is the sort of million-dollar question. We raised it. But then subsequently, when the Jackie Robinson West folks went back to those towns and said, look, we understand we did this, but hey, this is such a great story. Let's just leave it alone. Those towns said, no, we're not just leaving it alone. Or that part of that district said, no, we're not going to leave it alone. And it blew up. And, you know, obviously what happened during the summer was between Monet Davis and this team, it became absolutely global. I mean, literally global. The all-black team from Chicago ended up going to the White House. They performed at Major League Baseball games, throwing out first pitches. And it was such a cool story. The kid led off the game with had three home runs in a game. And now you find that after last year's failure, this year they needed to add a few players, and they figured out a way to do it, and they did it illegally. So it does speak to, it speaks to adult sort of selfishness in all this, and why a story like Rhode Island was such a positive story. And Little League wasn't, you know, to Little League's credit, they're not going to allow something like that to go on, even months later. If it can be fixed or corrected, it's fixed and corrected.
Man, how frustrating is that, folks? Again, that is actually from ESPN writer Carl Ravitch. He was a guest this morning on ESPN's Mike and Mike radio show, weighing in on, again, the Little League World Series now controversy, in which the Little League had decided to punish the Chicago team and strip them from their U.S. championship. Man, oh man, I really could not believe this story when it flashed upon my phone when I was getting ready for work this morning, folks. This was a team that we certainly talked about a lot in great detail here on Current Sports this past summer. And what was really cool from my perspective watching everything that took place in the Little League World Series this year was because, you know, again, you heard from Carl just then. I mean, you had two intriguing stories going on this summer when it pertained to the Little League World Series. Of course, number one, numero uno, was Monet Davis, who was, of course, the little girl who was just, I mean, she was unbelievable, folks. I mean, just dealing. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, still to this day, I saw the other day that Monet Davis actually, I mean, she loves sports. Her dream is to play for Gino Auriemma's UConn's women's basketball team. So, you know, every athletic event that she goes to and every person that she comes in contact with, I mean, they are fans of hers. Even, you know, Steph Curry, I saw the other day on ESPN, Steph Curry actually, who is a point guard for the Golden State Warriors NBA team, asked for her autograph before his basketball game. It just shows you how big the story of Monet Davis became, because you had this little girl who really just kind of took over the World Series at the mound. I mean, she was unbelievable. So you had that story going on. And then, of course, it was the Jackie Robinson West All-Star team from the Chi, Chicago, that, again, they became the U.S. champions, folks. They were very good. And what made this story so great, as you heard from Carl Ravitch just then, is that, you know, what those two stories meant for the African-American community as it pertains to the game of baseball was so influential, folks. Because I tell you what, me growing up in Detroit and being an African-American myself, I'll be honest with you, blacks just don't play baseball the way they used to. And it was so refreshing to turn on TV and see a group of young kids, and these aren't adults, these aren't players in the MLB, these are young kids playing the game of baseball, and they're pretty good at it, folks. I mean, it was so refreshing to see that, because in my eyes, you know, it kind of eluded hope for me that the game is totally not dead in African-American communities, period. So to see these young kids go all the way and win the U.S. championship and get to compete on the grandest stage internationally as well, even though they lost that game, but it was still so cool to watch and see. And this is a story now where you got these kids who have accomplished something monumental, and to now have that taken away from them by the hands of adults is totally and utterly ridiculous and upsetting. Ridiculous. And that's who it falls on here, folks. The adults who are in charge of this team, you know, the managers of this team, and the one in particular, head manager, Daryl Butler, who I believe needs to be called out here, and also the Division IV administrator within the area of Illinois, Michael Kelly, it falls on those guys' shoulders because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you're talking about kids here, kids who are playing the game because they love the game. And then you have, you know, and it's so crazy because, you know, we've talked about, you know, here on Current Sports, you know, time in and time out. Seems like every month we're talking about a story in the pros where some shiesty stuff is going on. And to have something like this happen at this level of sports, the youth level of sports, is so disheartening. And my heart definitely goes out to the kids. And, you know, it's so crazy because we're really looking at this story. I mean, this isn't the first time that something of this nature, something this controversial, has happened. And when it pertains to the Little League World Series, I can actually go back to 2001 here just to read a quick excerpt here. If you guys remember, if the name Rolando Paulino, if that name rings any sort of bell here, Rolando Paulino from Little League Bronx, New York, they had to forfeit its third place finish after records show that pitcher Danny Almonte was too old to play. He was actually 14 years old. Now, he lived outside the league boundaries and didn't participate in the required number of games before the international tournament. Now, Almonte's perfect game was erased, essentially. So, you know, when looking at this story, I mean, that's when this took place in 2001. And then, you know, to rewind the clock even more, if you remember in 1992, Zamboanga City Little League in the Philippines had to forfeit the World Series title after admitting to using 8 players from outside that city league's boundaries. Essentially, exactly what happened in this case. And, you know, I was even, not even, you know, just reading Ravitch's comments on this story, but also the Little League president and CEO's comments to this story. He was also on ESPN this morning, and he talked about how, you know, this is something where not only was Daryl Butler, the manager of this squad, obviously involved, and not only was Michael Kelly, the Division IV administrator within that state of Illinois pertaining to the World Series, wasn't only involved, but, you know, for something like this to just now come out, because that was my initial thought of this. Why is this story just now coming out? Because, I mean, again, folks, that happened last year in the summertime. That's when all of this went down, and now it's just coming out, and now you're stripping of their title now. It was covered up very, very well. And again, the president of the International Little League World Series talked about how there are many more moving pieces to this story that have yet to come out now. But at the end of the day, the essence of this story that is so disheartening at the end of the day is that, you know, you got to feel bad for the kids. The kids who went out there, who played the game, who won that U.S. championship. You got to feel bad now that accomplishment is now essentially gone. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that we talk about on today's show, you can do so. Also, even tweet me at AlMartinWKR or even go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Got to remind you all that Current Sports TV tapes tonight, folks. I am ecstatic about this one, okay? I actually got a chance to go out to downtown Lansing's Crown Boxing Gym, owned and operated by the one, the only, Ali Easley. Got a chance to go out there and meet a young man who is taking the boxing world by storm. Now, his name is Keon Gee. He's 10 years old, and he is the 2015 Silver Glove State Champion. How about that? I actually found out about the story, and it just shows you how the digital age that we live in. I found out the story by browsing my Facebook page, and I follow Crown Boxing. I like their page, and I saw Keon's picture pop up. I'm like, oh, my goodness. The Lansing State Journal has also done a story on him. It even pubbed tonight's taping. Again, you can catch the taping tomorrow night at 10 p.m. on WKR-TV, but if you want to get a chance to meet Keon, meet his trainers. If you want to meet Ali and also his assistant trainer, Moses, come on out tonight at 6 p.m. and just sign up online for free at WKAR.org. It's going to be a fantastic sit down. So I cannot wait for that, folks. Got to remind you all about that. All right, well, let's transition now into our second talking point here. I want to talk about the MSU men's basketball team, folks. They finally got the wheels back on the track here as Tom Izzo and company. Hey, it was just a complete romping of Northwestern last night. I mean, this thing wasn't even close, folks. Looking at the halftime score, I mean, I almost went to sleep watching the game. It was unbelievable how Michigan State was able to just dominate this game through ideally about 80 to 90% of the game. I mean, 38 to 14 at the half. That's how many points Northwestern scored throughout an entire 20 minutes of basketball, folks. 14 points. That is it. And, you know, this is essentially exactly what Michigan State needed. When coming off a loss to Illinois and now going into a game in which you play an OSU team that is amongst one of the top teams in the Big Ten Conference, this is a game that you needed from a confidence standpoint. And it was great to see what Michigan State was able to put together yesterday. And I've always said, Michigan State, this team, when they are on, they are on, folks. When they are knocking down shots, I mean, they're not just hitting, you know, 40 to 50% of their shots. I mean, they are on a roll, and it usually spells trouble for the opponent. And looking at, you know, what I thought was very interesting and something that Tom Izzo, I'm sure, is going to take a long and hard look at rotationally has to be Lou Rawls, Tum-Tum Naren, taking over that starting role yesterday and making Trice come off the bench in a game in which Trice played very, very solid. He actually had his best shooting night since that Iowa game, if you remember. He knocked down 4 3-pointers. He looked so confident, and so cool throughout that entire game. Travis Trice had it going, folks. Also want to shout out Denzel Valentine, who also looked very confident and cool. 14 points for him. He also drained 4 3-pointers. He had 8 assists. He was getting everybody involved. I mean, my goodness. When Travis Trice and Denzel Valentine are playing within themselves, this team looks like an entirely different team. And you know, going back to the statement about, you know, about Tum-Tum starting, the reason why that move was made, it was interesting to hear Tom Izzo's comments on that, was because he wanted to see another guard sort of relieve some of that pressure that has been on Travis Trice. And Tum-Tum is a guard where, you know, when you look at Tum-Tum, he's a totally different guard in respects to, if you compare it to Travis Trice. Travis Trice thrives off the jump shot. He's a shooter. Tum-Tum is a guy who can put the ball on the floor, who can create some attention and facilitate to guys when it comes to that penetration and kick type of a game. And he's also a guy who can get out in the fast break, get some easy layups. And he plays great defense. That's another thing that I think is not given a lot of credit when it comes to Tum-Tum's game. He plays very good defense, folks. He's a very good defensive guard. So, you know, when you have Tum-Tum starting and having Trice coming off the bench, I mean, Trice doesn't have to be that guy with the basketball all the time, trying to facilitate while also scoring at the same time. Trice, ideally last night, folks, if you really look at that game, want to dissect it and pick it apart, Trice ideally was a two guard. He wasn't playing that point guard a lot. Again, that role was primarily in the hands of Tum-Tum and also Denzel Valentine. There were not many times when you saw Travis Trice come down the court and play that role of facilitator. And in many ways, it allowed Trice to sort of just kind of settle into the game and just do him. And I really, really like that move. Whether or not we'll see it this Saturday against Ohio State, I have no idea. But I do believe that you may see some form of it, and you better believe that Tom Izzo is taking that move into consideration. And that may be a game-changing move, looking at how the rest of the season may pan out. And, you know, it's so interesting because, you know, we've seen some big, big games from this team, from Michigan State on the road. Now, of course, you know, having that home court advantage and playing in front of the Izzone, that's all fine and dandy. But we've seen some of Michigan State's best performances and best games come on the road, to be honest with you, looking at this season. And I do think that, you know, when you look at last night's game, when you look at games like Iowa and so on and so forth, you know, not having to constantly deal with the home crowd's pressure of you living up to expectations, that you should be living up to. When you get away from that sometimes, it allows you to focus and bind together. And I do think, when it comes to multiple games on the road this year for Michigan State, we have seen that come to fruition. Now, a few things to know here. Michigan State is now in a five-way tie for second place in the Big Ten. You talk about jumbled up, right? Five teams, folks, are tied for second place in conference play. Izzo, I got to shout out Tom Izzo as well. It seems as though every single day I'm talking about a new monumental accomplishment for Tom Izzo. But Izzo, with the win yesterday, ties Ward Lambert for third place in the when it comes to all-time Big Ten victories. So another milestone for Tom Izzo. And hey, free throws. That's something that was not, you know, we're looking at the post-game coverage from the Big Ten Network and even some articles in the paper today when it comes to the Lansing State Journal and Detroit Free Press. I mean, you didn't really see any. I didn't see one graph concerning free throws. Now, you have to temper and sort of pad that discussion with the fact that, hey, when you're blowing a team out as bad as Michigan State blew out Northwestern last night, hey, Michigan State could have missed 10 free throws last night, and it wouldn't have mattered. So it's in those close games that free throws really, really matter. Last night, I mean, they went 9 for 13. They shot, that's 69% if you do the math, folks. They could have not shot any free throws last night and still have gotten the win over Northwestern. And also, I mean, again, from a confidence standpoint, this is the type of win that you definitely want, and this is what this win sort of does for Michigan State. But how much, I guess you can say, weight does this win hold moving forward now in the season? Let's be honest here. It's like more like a 5 to 10 pound weight as opposed to a 50 to 75 pound weight. Because if you look at it, they played Northwestern. Northwestern has not been great, folks. They aren't a great basketball team. I mean, again, granted, they've had some close losses, and granted, they did push Michigan State to overtime. Folks, Northwestern has won one game in the Big Ten Conference. They are 1-10. And a lot of their woes last night, to be completely honest with you, just had to do with just them missing. I mean, I saw a lot of shots rattle inside the rim and out of the rim, a lot of easy looks just not converted on. So at the end of the day, this was a confidence win more than anything. Alex, you actually, I'm sure, watched the game last night. Alex Sharg, our engineer of Current Sports. What were your thoughts, my man?
That's a game where you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt because Northwestern just couldn't hit anything. I mean, let's be real. Michigan State primarily won because Northwestern couldn't really make any shots. That's kind of how I see it, Al.
Yeah, coupled with the fact that they were just hot. Yeah. Michigan State was just hot.
Yeah.
A terribly cold team facing a terribly hot team. I mean, hey, who's going to win that one? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and the thing about Michigan State is they hit all their shots. It was definitely a good confidence win, like you said, man. I think you pretty much hit every aspect of the win.
Yeah. All right. Folks, what do you think? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to bring up this before we invite Damon Rensing of the MSU men's soccer team. Magic Johnson had a few choice words and interesting comments concerning his former team, the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, Magic said that he has serious questions, say the least, about whether Jim Buss can turn around the team, which is mirrored in the worst period in franchise history. Here's a bite, actually, from Magic addressing the situation out in L.A.
This is where I have the problem, Stephen A. When you're wrong, and you got to stand up and say, I made a mistake. He has not once said to Laker Nation, Mike Brown, I made a mistake. Coach D'Antoni, I made a mistake. Just say, hey, I made a mistake. We can understand that. Okay, we can deal with that. He always put it on somebody else. Then he's mad at me because I criticized him, right? Oh, Magic's trying to get a job with the Lakers. Magic's trying to, you know, bring me down. No, I'm not. I'm telling the truth about the situation, trying to make us better, trying to get us to a winning situation in terms of the Lakers back to being relevant, winning again. So you get mad at me when I tell the truth. Then you're saying, oh, he's just jealous because my dad picked me over him. No. I decided to sell my shares.
Yeah, again, that's Magic Johnson on ESPN's First Take yesterday. He was also on SportsCenter, kind of an ESPN tour yesterday, as he weighed in on his former team, the Los Angeles Lakers, in their current state. And I tell you what, when looking at this team, and reading the messages within that bite and within that spiel for Magic Johnson, hey, he's just keeping it real, folks. I mean, Jim Buss, again, is a guy who's very, very stubborn. Very, very stubborn. Now, Buss became the Lakers' executive vice president of basketball operations, which is the top person on the basketball decision-making side, after his father, of course, legendary owner, Jerry Buss, passed away in February of 2013. So Jim took over. And, you know, if you just read a few comments from those that have worked with Jim and read into the comments, again, made by Magic Johnson there, they would tell you that Jim is a guy who's very hard-headed and a guy who is either his way or the highway. And he believes that he can turn around anything. Doesn't matter what the situation is. And again, the Lakers, this is the worst that I've ever seen the Los Angeles Lakers organization in all of my years watching basketball. And I'm an NBA junkie. Follow every team, every standing, every moment. And to see what has gone down in L.A., has to be so disheartening for so many Los Angeles Lakers fans. And it's no question that, and it's no secret that Magic Johnson and Jim have bumped heads and have been butting heads for quite some time now. And this was a point where, hey, I appreciate honesty in the world of journalism, because far too often in this business, you know, we constantly hear the cliche answers. Athletes who don't want to rock the boat, athletes who want to give you kind of the black and white point of perspective. But every once in a while, it is certainly refreshing to hear realness, and this was certainly that. It's going to be very interesting to see if Jim Buss decides to bite back, but we all know that some moves have to be made in order for L.A. to even be close to any relevance as far as top teams in the NBA. And when you have one of the best there ever was in Kobe Bryant, I can only imagine the frustration that has been going through his mind, a guy who is no spring chicken. No spring chicken. Kobe Bryant's days are certainly numbered in the league. I mean, he's out for the rest of the season here, and he's going through rehab with that shoulder injury. And Kobe doesn't have a lot of years left to play, folks. He's probably, for me, one, maybe two at best, and that may be reaching a little bit. But things have to turn around, and, you know, I always equate, you know, the Lakers, a team like the Lakers and teams like the San Antonio Spurs, teams like, if I want to go the baseball route, you know, the New York Yankees, the New England Patriots, those are franchises that expect a championship each and every year. It's going to be very interesting to see how that story pans out, folks. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, he is in studio, folks. Man, one of my favorite coaches here in East Lansing, Damon Rensing, MSU men's soccer head coach. He'll talk about his incredible 2015 recruiting class, all of that, and so much more. Don't touch that dial. Welcome back to Current Sports. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. Again, folks, our phone lines are open. We will be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m., 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We have our dedicated caller and dedicated listener on line one, my man Ray. How you doing, Ray?
Skipper, how you doing?
I'm blessed, my man. Can't complain.
Hey, I might tell you something. That was the best movement by Michigan State all year last night.
Yeah, against Northwestern, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's a bad team. But I tell you what, you could beat anybody in the Big Ten if you played like that all year.
Right, right.
I mean, they made their free throws. They were getting all their threes. But, you know, you're going to have nights like that. But what I like was the movement out front where they had those guys dribbling around like the Harlem Globetrotters or something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you see now they were penetrating.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a solid game for him, a game that I think for me, Ray, as I just stated, I mean, from a confidence standpoint, that is the type of game that you want heading into this weekend playing an Ohio State team that is certainly dangerous, to say the least. So from a confidence standpoint, they needed and desperately needed a game like this coming off the loss to Illinois, because I went into that locker room over the weekend, and I got to tell you what, Ray, I mean, it was like walking into a funeral. So...
Well, I could see why, the way they were playing. They were playing like it was going to a funeral.
Right, exactly.
They were moving without the ball. If you play like that, I think you can beat Ohio State. And Tuesday, you can beat the Bullies by 20 points if you go up there and play like that.
Well, certainly only time will tell, Ray. Only time will tell,
all
my
right,
man.
Have a good day.
All right, you too. Thanks a lot, Ray. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Well, let's invite our outstanding guest for Current Sports today on the show. Now, the Michigan State men's soccer team has certainly turned a lot of heads with the recruiting class that they announced not too long ago. Now, the class includes Hunter Barone, Connor Corrigan, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to screw a few of these names up, so hopefully Damon can correct me here. Robbie Court, DeJuan Jones, I do know that one. He's a local kid from East Lansing. Caden Keller, Zach Coven, Luke Min, and Ryan Sirikowski. So to talk about that incredible class and so much more, he's right here in studio with me, head coach of the MSU men's soccer team, Damon Rensing. Damon, how you doing? Did I butcher a lot of those names?
Just a couple. It was gotcha. It's Hunter Barone and Luke Manet. But
Luke Manet, gotcha.
So that's we're really excited. It's a great, great class. And we've got three local kids, which is great. DeJuan Jones, Zach Coven, and Luke Manet are all from Okemos, Grand Ledge, and then obviously DeJuan's from East Lansing. We've got, I think, a couple kids from Michigan. Robbie's from Detroit. Hunter's from Grand Rapids. And we got some kids from Chicago, Indianapolis, and St. Louis. So it's a great variety of players from different places, but we're certainly proud of having some local kids and Michigan kids.
Yeah, sir. I mean, when you look at this class right now, Damon, I mean, what excites you the most about this class in comparison to others you've had in the past?
Well, it's they've won. These players have won. They're certainly very talented, and there's a lot of attacking players coming into the group, so I think we're excited about that. Ryan Sirikowski has been a member of the U18 U.S. national team out of Chicago. DeJuan Jones is Mr. Michigan. He scored buckets of goals here the last few years for East Lansing High and for the TNT Soccer Club. And then you've got Hunter Barone from Grand Rapids, who is also a high school All-American, and along with DeJuan Jones, and he scores. So, you know, we're losing Adam Montague, Tim Kreutz, Jay Chapman. So we're going to need some guys to come in and step up and look to score goals, and I think we're getting that.
And to talk about those local kids, I mean, for you, Damon, I mean, the recruiting world is so crazy. But to have, I mean, you have three local kids, as you just stated, a part of this class. I mean, is it easier to build relationships on the recruiting trail when you have such a local tie to them and they're only, what, 5 to 10 minutes away?
Yeah, that certainly helps. I think you know exactly what you're getting in the young man. You can see him play quite a bit. We know the families pretty well. And I think a lot of those local kids grew up being Spartans. So anytime you got somebody that's already proud to put on the Spartan jersey, it doesn't have to be explained to them what it's about. They already know what it's about. So I think those things are great.
And now we've had DeJuan Jones on the show multiple times throughout his senior year at East Lansing High. And, of course, Mr. Soccer for the state of Michigan. I mean, how good do you think this kid can be? And what makes him so special, Damon?
Well, I think he could be very good, you know. You never know. I mean, you hear the Nick Sabans and different people talk about the recruiting stuff and just being on paper and that kind of stuff. But I think when you look at DeJuan, he's a gifted athlete. He's a tireless worker. He really works hard on the field. And he's got good soccer skills, too. So I think when you combine all that, I think he could be very special here at Michigan State. You know, usually what happens, I kind of use the phrase, you know, freshmen usually kind of get smacked in the mouth at some point when they start out, you know, whether it's speed of play, just getting up to the speed or the strength. It's how they respond to that, you know, and each kid has something a little bit different that kind of smacks them in the mouth. Maybe it's just because they're far away from home. Maybe it's, you know, they're a really skillful player, but they're not used to the physicality of college. I think with DeJuan, once he gets kind of caught up with the speed of play, not that he's very fast, but just the thought process and things always seem to happen faster on the field. Once he gets caught up to that, which I think could be, you know, right away as a freshman, it might take a little longer, but once he does, I think he could be very good in the Big Ten and nationally.
Now, you as a coach, Damon, I mean, you talk about freshmen getting smacked in the mouth, adjusting to that next level of play. I mean, as a coach, I mean, how do you try to help them through that period? And what is the difference in a kid getting it right off the bat and making that transition quick as opposed to the ones who it may take a little bit longer?
Yeah, that's certainly you can't gauge it exactly, but I think you reinstill confidence in him and say, look, we brought you here at Michigan State because we think you can be a good player and you're going to do good things here for us. You know, maybe it's not right away, but keep working hard. We tell them to be patient, enjoy the experience. And I think when those guys focus on that, focus on helping the team as much as you can. Don't worry about yourself as an individual. And when you do those things, that stuff kind of takes care of itself.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with the one, the only MSU men's soccer head coach, Damon Rensing. Now, Damon, of course, with everything that's gone down, I mean, you guys went to the Elite Eight, lost to Providence, had a chance to breathe a little bit, but you guys are right back to work, right? I mean, you've been working well with the team, I mean, since the beginning of the year, right?
Yeah, we can work in 8 hours a week right now, so two of them are soccer, so we do some functional training and skill work with the guys. They're in the weight room. We do some fitness with them. We actually do, tonight, the guys got yoga. They do an hour of yoga.
Wow. Yeah. And what does that do? How does that help them?
You know, it just kind of gets some of these guys, when they come out of high school too, they've just always had this invincible feeling that they can just go play, train hard and not stretch and not look after their bodies. And I think when you get to college, it kind of hits you again. And so it just shows them where they can improve from a flexibility standpoint. It helps them because they do get strains and tired. And Tony Thomas, she does a great job with the guys here. So it's worked well. We've done it the last couple of years.
So you kind of think outside the box when it comes to motivating them and getting them, I guess you can say, polished in other areas other than X's and O's on the field as well, huh, Damon?
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, that is pretty cool. All right, well, I got to ask about this. I mean, because, we've talked about signing day. For now, going on now 2 weeks. I mean, that's been the big story, of course, when it comes to the football world. I mean, sure. We talked about D'Antonio's recruiting class and so much more. For you, I mean, Damon, do you like the world of recruiting? I mean, what is the most stressful part of recruiting itself?
For me, soccer is an equivalency sport. So in football, you're either a full scholarship or you're a walk-on.
Right.
You know, in soccer, we're equivalency. So we offer partial scholarships, and so you get into this business where you're negotiating finances with these families, and sometimes that can get in the way of how much you really like a kid or the perception of what a family thinks of you and what you think of them as a player. And that's unfortunate, but it's part of the business. You have to do it. You got to be good about how you gauge the scholarship. We've got 10 scholarships that we got to try to split up between 26 players. So
right,
that stuff can become difficult. And to me, that's the hardest part, because I got into college coaching not to be a salesperson or a negotiator. I got in because I like working with kids 18 to 22 that want to be good soccer players. But that's part of it. And that, for me, that's probably the most unfortunate part of the business.
Was that a hard adjustment for you when you first started coaching? I mean, trying to going out and just trying to woo a kid into coming to you to Michigan State, was that hard at all?
No, not about Michigan State, because I've been so, being a student athlete here, I always feel like I'm not selling them on something. It's something I firmly believe in, what we can provide, because
right. Kind of sells itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I lived it, and obviously Michigan State is a great institution. The way things are going with football, basketball, Mark Hollis, I mean, it's a pretty easy sell, I think, to young men who are interested in playing college soccer here.
Certainly, certainly. All right. Well, I want to also bring up this, because you guys announced, actually last week, Friday, the hiring of Cal Wasserman, an assistant men's as an assistant coach for your guys' team. Now, Wasserman replaces Kylie Stannard, who becomes the head coach at Yale University. Why is Cal the right man for the job?
Cale is great. His mom went to Michigan State, so he's got some Spartan ties. We like that. He did a great job. He was a head coach at Saginaw Valley, so he took them when they were struggling a little bit and took them all the way to the national championship game
right.
in 2012. So I think he brings a wealth of experience. He's already familiar with the college game, and Saginaw Valley use a lot of the same recruiting circles and areas. He knows the state of Michigan really well, as you can tell in a recruiting class. We recruit a lot out of Michigan. He knows the Midwest. He knows the Ontario, Toronto area, which we've gotten Jay Chapman and a few others from. So I think he's really well rehearsed in our recruiting base and footprint. So it should be a smooth transition for him.
Now, did you guys have any chemistry prior to the hiring?
Cale's come in and worked our camps.
Okay.
you know, and so I've seen him on the recruiting trails. I've always had a lot of respect for how he's done things at Saginaw Valley. Certainly respect how he carries himself as a person, and I've always enjoyed kind of the conversation. So he came to mind right away when Kylie left, and we were excited for Kylie. He's been here 6 years with us, and for him to move on and get be the head coach at an Ivy League institution is fantastic.
Oh, that is fantastic. Folks, Damon Rensing, MSU men's soccer head coach. All right, Damon, I got to ask this. Have the wounds been healed now since the loss to Providence?
For the most part, but then you still have those moments where it comes back up. It was tough. I mean, you give Providence a lot of credit, but I thought that was a game that we could have won. I thought we played well enough to win. They scored two goals that I don't know if they'd score in most games.
Yeah.
You know, so it we still kind of go back to it. You know, we lost a lot of good seniors, and I was more sad for those guys because I thought the time and effort that they put in over the last 4 years, you know, to get them to a College Cup would have been great. But they've had two great years getting to the Elite Eight. You know, the other thing is we had the highest male team GPA last semester. So
wow.
For our guys to get to the Elite Eight and have a 3.45 team GPA, that's very indicative of the Adam Montagues, the Ryan Keeners, the Fatai Alashays. So we're happy, almost happy for them. But in answering short, it still pops up once in a while. I'm afraid it's going to pop up for a few more years, too.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, you know, because you guys have had an Elite Eight appearance as of recently as well. I mean, are you tired of just getting to the Elite Eight now? Are you saying, okay, I want to make a Final Four, I want to go further now? Does that bug you as well as a head coach, Damon?
You know, it's absolutely you want to get to a Final Four. If we get to a Final Four, I want to win a national championship. I don't want to just be there. But I think when you step back and look at how many other programs would love to say that they've been to the Elite Eight 2 years in a row? We're very proud of that and what we've accomplished, and yet there's that kind of underlying hunger to continue to go further.
So do you ever get away from it, Damon, and say, okay, all right, enough with the recruiting stress, enough with the X's and O's. What do you do to just get your mind off things?
Oh, I love live music. I'm a huge Fish fan, you know.
nice.
But, so I try to catch a concert or two from them every year. No, I spend time with my kids. I got a first grader and a third grader and my wife. So when anytime I can spend time with them as a family and try to forget about soccer once in a while, we try to do that.
Oh, well, it's always a pleasure having you on, Damon. Looking forward to some big things from you and your program. And I tell you, when does the season start again?
Well, we just train throughout the spring here.
Okay.
But then we play some exhibitions, but they don't count towards anything. And then we'll start back up right around August 12th next year.
There we go. All right, folks, the one, the only, Damon Rensing, MSU men's head soccer coach. Damon, always a pleasure, my man.
Thanks for having me, y'all.
Appreciate it. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we've got Barbershop Wednesday for you. What does it take to make it at the next level? We'll also talk about a little Alex Rodriguez and all of that and so much more. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. And if you're tuning in and saying, whoa, wasn't expecting this music. Well, each and every Wednesday, Alex, what do you dub it? Each and every Wednesday. Tell the people, my man.
That was from a while back, but I believe that's a little bit of Bollywood music there.
And why do you play that on Wednesdays?
It's World Wednesday. We do world music today.
There you go. World music. That's a little Bollywood music right there from India. Gotta love that. Gotta love that. We culture you here on Current Sports as well. All right, folks. Well, about 10 minutes left in the show. Again, our phone lines are open 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Alex, you actually missed our very intriguing Top 5 Tuesday yesterday. Of course, with Valentine's Day being now, four days away now? It's Wednesday, so 3 days away now. I always call it the season where every man in America goes completely broke. But hey, it's for a good cause. Love is certainly in the air. So we had a special Top 5 Tuesday where we listed the top 5 sports couples in the game. Now, numero uno, which I got a lot of flack from my sister and mom, by the way, after the show. Number one for me happened to be Tom Brady and model Giselle. For you, Alex, who is your favorite sports couple if you had to get one? Because I remember, if I recall last year, you and I got into a pretty heated argument about whether or not to put Jay-Z and Beyonce on the list. But who would it be?
That's right. I don't know, man. I mean, I think now after watching a recent movie with this actress, I got to say Kate Upton and Justin Verlander is probably the top couple, man. I mean,
really?
The fact that you have one of the most dominant pitchers of the game with one of the most dominant fads of pop culture in the United States, that for me is good. And no knock on Jay-Z and Beyoncé. Yeah. You know, the Illuminati power couple.
Well, I'm trying to think. Did
heard.
I put them on my list?
I think you put them. I think I did
because Jay-Z is a partial owner of the Nets.
And we both put Woods and Lindsey Vonn up there, too.
Oh, of course.
That was like number two or three.
So I think Tiger Woods and Lindsey Vonn are given.
I don't know. I think Kate Upton and Justin Verlander have made a big comeback, man.
That is one I actually forgot.
They got caught on camera at Disney World. I mean, there's a lot of stuff lately with them.
And don't forget about the Frappening last year. That was a big one, too. So, Kato, what movie is that?
Plus, it's local.
What movie was
that? I saw this movie. It was, the name is moved away from me now, but it's with Cameron Diaz and Kate Upton. It's about it's kind of actually a little bit of a interesting movie. It's about women that they all are seeing the same guy and they don't realize it.
Oh,
and
is it Nicki Minaj in that too?
Yeah, Nicki Minaj.
I have seen the preview of that. All right. Well, interesting. I that's a good pick though. That's not a bad pick at all.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's transition now. I want to transition into a very quick Barbershop Wednesday, one that I think is very intriguing. And again, this one came about because of me being in the barbershop and having this very argument not too long ago, all right? First off, let's play our theme music.
Well, I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but a healthy conversation.
Now, just recently, ladies and gentlemen, actually just hours ago, less than 24 hours ago, I should say, Adrian Payne, former Michigan State men's basketball star, he came to Minnesota on Monday as a seldom used member of the powerful Atlanta Hawks. Now, again, while he was with the Hawks, that's the very team that Adrian Payne was actually drafted to. I mean, really, Adrian Payne, you know, made his home on the bench for one of the league's best teams. I mean, the Atlanta Hawks are certainly. A force to be reckoned with this year. He had a few troubles. I believe he got injured midway through the beginning of the year and even went to the D League to play a few games. But, you know, the Atlanta Hawks decided to part ways and trade him to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Now, the Timberwolves acquired Payne from the Hawks for a protected first-round draft pick yesterday, bringing Payne to a team that loved him when he was coming out of the draft. They were very, very high, if you remember. Minnesota really, really wanted Adrian Payne. And, of course, the Wolves, they have a trade exemption from Kevin Love, the Kevin Love trade to Cleveland last summer. So it's very interesting. And this is the Barbershop Wednesday question I want to bring up. How exactly do you know that when a player, in any sport for that matter, who was great in college, because Adrian Payne was a spectacular player in college, how do you know that that player is going to be successful at the next level? Because frankly, it varies across the board. This opinion varies across the board because, you know, I was talking to a few of the guys in the barbershop the other day, and they were saying Adrian Payne has no excuse as to why he didn't pan out in Atlanta. And I totally 1,000% disagreed with them due to the situation that Adrian Payne was introduced to in Atlanta. Again, who was one of the best teams in the National Basketball Association. So, Alex, how do you know, and do you think Adrian Payne should have panned out to be better with the Hawks?
Yeah, that's the thing is, I don't think you do know. And if we did, you would be working for the NBA, my man. You wouldn't be here at WKR anymore.
I'd be making millions, baby. Dollar bill, y'all. But yeah, so how do you, I mean, because I tell you what, I will say this, though. Because there are certain players. Just take a look. Looking at the NBA. The NBA in basketball is such a game where you can have an immediate impact, an immediate profound impact because you are on the floor the whole time. It's not like football where you're just playing offensive, you know, or you may be an offensive or defensive player. In basketball, I mean, you play both ends of the floor, and it's such a finesse sport. A phenom like a LeBron James, like a Carmelo Anthony, like a Dwayne Wade, it's easier in basketball. It's easier to look at a player in basketball who played in college and was a great player in college and pretty much guesstimate whether or not that player is going to be great at the next level.
I just think the situation in which Payne came into the Atlanta Hawks, where you got, first off, the biggest competition that he has is actually a local tie, Grand Ledge native, former Grand Ledge native, I should say, Al Horford, who is a monster, actually an all-star, who's been named on the all-star team. That's the likes of which Adrian Payne was competing for a starting role or any type of minutes for. So you can't fault him for that. Second, I think, is health. So first, the situation, first off, for a rookie to come in and have an immediate impact, there has to be minutes, and room for minutes allocated to that player. He did not have that situation out in Atlanta. Number two, you got to stay healthy, because how many times have we seen young players come into the league, get injured in practice or in a game, and all of a sudden their golden opportunity to prove that they can play at that level is now vanquished and disappeared and gone. So that's number two for me. And number three is a big one, because this is one of the biggest reasons. This is one of the biggest knocks that I had actually on J.J. Redick when J.J. came from college to the NBA. And that was whether or not J.J. could do more than just shoot the basketball. When you talk about success at the next level, you've got to do more than one thing great. You've got to do everything, just about everything great, because you are playing with the best of the best. And Adrian Payne is a guy who can shoot the basketball. He's a guy who can rebound the basketball. He's a pretty good defender. He can put it on the floor and beat you with a first step if he needs to. He's got an NBA body. His overall makeup as a basketball player can really transition to success in the league. He just has not been given the opportunity. So for those that want to bash AP and say, hey, I don't know if AP will ever be a force in the league, I say you got to give him time. That is way too premature, in my opinion. And also, the leadership, this is more of a luxury than a must-have intangible to be successful at the next level. If you have that type of leadership, that veteran leadership around you, you know, a veteran guard or a veteran big man to help you make that transition, Charles Barkley talks about all the time how when he entered the league, he had a lot of mentors. He had Dr. J. He had, you know, I'm trying to think here, Bill Russell. Bill Russell, he reached out to Bill Russell, and he was also another big mentor of his. When you have mentors like that, it makes it easier to pick their brains and get advice. Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan. Michael would always give Kobe advice. When you have that also, it's not a must, but it certainly helps when making that transition. So I think it's too early. Now, if you want to pick on another player or other rookies in the league, I don't know if Gary Harris is going to be successful, Alex. I don't know, man, because out there in Denver, I think, first off, Denver is very guard-heavy. That's a very – you talk about the situation that Gary is in. It's a very guard-heavy team. So as far as Gary getting opportunities to show his talent, but with the opportunities Gary has been given, I don't know what Gary Harris does that is great. Can you answer that question? What part of Gary Harris's game is
great? But here's the thing. I think you're looking at it with a glass half full kind of thing. I mean, you can look at it the other way where there are too many guards that are pretty good on Denver, you could look at it and say, all right, isn't Gary Harris, doesn't he bring something to Denver that the other guards don't bring?
But what is that? That's the thing. What does he do that's great that is different from those players?
Well,
I don't know.
I mean, most of the other guards on that team are shooters. I mean, they're cold-blooded shooters.
Ty Lawson, he's certainly a great penetration guard. I mean,
yeah,
he can also put on the
floor. But he also is a great shooter. And I think with Gary, yeah, he could score, but what maybe he can bring is more that playmaking ability to kind of be a moderator, more of a guy who's going to go in and drive the paint, really penetrate and do some stuff in the paint. So that's a good question. I don't know. But to your argument that there are players in the league that you have to be well-rounded, I disagree with that. We'll talk more tomorrow. Look at Ben Wallace. He was a horrible offensive player.
But Ben did more defensively. That's what Ben Wallace was in the game for.
Well, that's what
I'm saying. We'll continue it tomorrow. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Wednesday, folks. And you don't want to miss tomorrow's show. Be easy, people.